Before I begin my sermon proper today, I want to thank Bob and Patricia for going to the thank you lunch yesterday at Calvin Presbyterian. I know that they were representatives of our church were specially invited to go to that lunch because of our help with Calvin in the month of December, and Bob was managing the Calvin pews in our basement for well over a year. So thank you to Bob and Patricia for doing that. And I know that they really appreciate the ministry of St. Matthew and our partnership with them in the gospel. Today at 3 p.m. I will be at their opening service, where the head of the National Presbyterian Church in Canada will be there. And I think other guests from the city will be there as well, 3 p.m. 5 p.m., or is it around 5, we set up for the dinner. Is this right? Am I getting this right? At Peace Lutheran today? 4 o'clock. So if you would like to come and help with that, please do. I will be going, and I know others here are going as well. It's a wonderful ministry that's developing with Peace Lutheran. Speaking of Peace Lutheran, this week we begin joint midweek Lenten services with them. The first one is going to be at Peace Lutheran on Thursday evening, Holden Evening Prayer, which is a beautiful setting of evening prayer at 7 p.m. It's only about a half an hour service, so if you're thinking you have to give up your whole Thursday evening, no, you don't. But it's a wonderful Lenten discipline and expression of worship. If you want to come to the study, the supper study that is beforehand, starting at 5:45, it's called Making Sense of the Cross. A bunch of you have signed up already. Feel free to sign up. Even if there's not enough books, there's going to be a DVD component each time where the author of the book summarizes the themes of the chapter. So you don't even have to really read the chapter if you don't want to, although you'll get more out of it. David's clapping in the background. The books are there. There's an envelope under the books where you can put your money and write that you've paid. That would be wonderful. Okay, enough of announcements. Think positive, Lent begins. Think positive, Lent begins. Whoever came up with that sign message in my absence is a mind reader, so thank you. I had scribbled a couple of notes to myself before I went on vacation about Lenten themes for this year. One of them reads, Lent as the exploration of what's possible. Another read, the triple victory of Christ in the desert is the key to understanding Lent. So again, thanks to the sign folks who work in collaboration with me every week to put up informative and illuminating information on our sign. And this week, I think they nailed it. And so it begins. Another 40-day Lent before another 50-day season of Easter. And before you know it, we're into that exciting time of the year known as ordinary time. And we'll wonder, what was that all about? Perhaps in other years, Lent came along and you had the feeling, or you were told, here's an opportunity to do something, to quit something, start something, explore something. And then when it was over, you wondered why you didn't take it. Was it the pressure of time? A persistent feeling of being stuck, maybe. Perhaps a sense that you simply couldn't do it. So why bother? Well, how about something different? How about this year we learn a little bit more about the potential this part of the church year offers us? How about we explore with gentleness and respect a way to become better people, even as we recognize that we will fail and falter as we try to do it. In truth, it's taken the church a long time to learn that this is what Lent is really for. Lent was grasped in great power in the first centuries as a preparation for baptism. But then it degenerated into a way for the church to browbeat the citizens of Christendom. You should be doing better. You need to do harsh penance. Don't you know you're all a bunch of sinners? Or words or messages to that effect. And so its power was lost. Not because those things are all untrue. At least some of the time, for most of us, all of us, they are true. Its power was lost because the message was not tied to possibility, not tied to the deeply positive message of the Bible in the way it should have been. And so, in reaction, most of the Protestant churches threw out Lent, making the potential power of Easter so much less. Instead of a spirituality tied to the actual patterns of our living, that is, our eating, our sleeping, our giving, our loving, our temptations, Easter became a one-off event with no preparation leading up to it and no follow-up afterwards. Now, we live in a culture of one-offs, where people live from one event to the next. But we have this amazing, challenging, and wonderful opportunity to recover a spirituality rooted in real life. To root a spirituality in real life, we need time. A time to focus the change we need. A framework of time that is long enough, but not too long. Long enough to begin to allow our thoughts to change, which allows our living to change. And this pattern was established in the scriptures, and it has a name, 40, the number 40. And it rained 40 days and 40 nights. And the Israelites were in the desert 40 years. And Moses was on the mountain of God for 40 days. And Elijah fasted for 40 days. This and the story in front of us today are the reasons why Lent has 40 days. Time to experience the wilderness and the demons that want to drag us down. Time enough to summon the help we need so that, like Jesus, we can tell them to go to hell. And it is to Jesus and his own 40-day test that we must turn if we're to understand the paradoxical saying on our sign, "Think positive. Lent begins." In his best-selling book, What Makes Your Brain Happy and Why You Should Do the Opposite, David DeSalvo explains what kind of thinking actually leads to long-term change, and it's not the kind that is regularly served up by all of those who advocate just thinking positively. Not all thoughts are created equal, in other words. Some thoughts have a far greater potential to help us grow and change. Some thoughts, however positive sounding, simply reinforce our biases and thought patterns that are in reality not positive but negative. And so, what was it about Jesus' thinking that was really and truly positive? Is it possible that Jesus' way of thinking might yet be the way for us to think and thus live positively? We're able to actually think positively when we're thinking and then acting from a core identity that is given to us by God. It is only this that helps us to begin to confront our shame, our disappointments in ourselves, It is only this that helps us understand what it means to love our neighbors as ourselves. And so here's the foundational thought. You are my son, the beloved. With you I am well pleased. It's not in our story. It comes, as you know, just as Jesus is baptized, immediately prior to this story. It is these words that form the necessary background for these. Jesus, full of the Holy Spirit, returned from the Jordan and was led by the Spirit into the wilderness, where for 40 days he was tempted by the devil. Jesus is here entering into all these 40s, these patterns, and filling them with new provision, purpose, and indeed forging a new path. Because he's entertaining the truly liberating positive thought that he is God's beloved, he can be led into the wilderness, not as a punishment, but as a way of exploring God's new way with the world. His part in helping all of human culture be liberated from the way things have always been done. Luke has a different order to the three devilish tests from Matthew. In Luke, we get Jesus resisting illegitimate ways of getting his daily bread first, and then second, resisting the ultimate fulfillment of his mission. The immediate gratification test, if you will, followed by the what will define a successful life test. In between, we have the modus operandi, or the how will I live life test. Will he seek to live his vocation like some modern politicians, appealing to the surface desires of human societies? Or will he engage in the much more difficult task of seeking to win humans via love and character? However many times I've failed these three tests, I've come to understand that if I'm going to grow as a person, if I'm going to possess and settle into the inheritance God is giving us, to use the language of our first readings, these are the tests that will always present themselves. What's right in front of me today? In other words, where's my provision coming from? Where am I headed ultimately? In other words, what's my purpose? And how do I live with the people I'm with today? In other words, what path will I take? Provision. God will provide. Yes, my daily bread, which is less than I think I need, or so my doctor tells me. But other breads as well, the bread of learning, the bread of fellowship and of service, the bread of this table, provision that will really fill us. Purpose. I don't have to follow the Canadian or American or Danish dream of a good life. I don't have to carve out success on my own terms. I can enter the most fruitful partnership of all that is born of worship. Path. When I'm tempted to play the political game and put myself forward, I can remember that true significance comes as I treat the person in front of me as an image of Christ. Love changes the world. D'Armond McCulloch, the greatest living historian of Christianity, professor at Oxford, recently wrote a book called Silence, A Christian History, in which he explores the history of prayer in the church. And at the end of the book, McCulloch, who's an agnostic, not a practicing Christian, but a friend of Christians, as he calls himself, urges Christians to take up the practice Jesus exemplified in the desert, what he calls arrow prayers, sharp little bits of truth that deflate our egos and orient us to the truth in the face of daily temptations to compromise our baptismal identity. We will all be led into the desert. We will all need to face the tests that Jesus passed. The only question is, will we avail ourselves of the resources he provides us? What if this year we were to start each day of Lent with a short arrow prayer? With Christ, I am beloved of God. I am God's daughter or son. God is pleased with me. I am God's beloved. I am God's son. I am well-pleasing to God. The very breathing in of that arrow prayer is also a breathing out of I'm useless. Nobody loves me. I can't do it. Nobody cares. You breathe one in, the other has to leave. The very breathing in of that prayer is a kind of sending into the wildernesses around us, even in our own souls. But here's the difference. Now, with the Spirit, in the Spirit, by the power of the Spirit. Because truth joins itself to our soul and empowers us. Think and pray positive. Lent begins.